Welcome back to Sports Talk. Adrian Broaddus here. It's time to talk a little fencing, and coming back to the program is one of our great friends. She's Margaret DeLong, president and head coach of Sal DeLong Fencing Academy. Margaret, it's so great to see you. You're back with us, and you brought some friends with us again here. We're talking fencing on the program, something that we don't do a lot here in sports. You know, this is the summer. We've been talking a lot of soccer, a lot of basketball, a lot of baseball. We're leading into the football season, but it's nice to take a little break and talk a little fencing with you here on the program today.
Especially during the summertime. Yeah, we definitely are very much busy during the summer, believe it or not. All our fencing activities are surrounded by bringing new kids to the programs. And so we have fencing camps coming up next week, starting on the 15th, and then the second and last camp is on the week after. So those are the way that we promote the sport here in our community. But mostly, besides being so open to the community and bring new blood to the system, we also have those one that they compete at the National United States Fencing National Championships.
Yes.
So that's the season is coming to an end for us, and that's how we celebrate the season, all the hard work that everybody put into this. So,
well, we need to include fencing in summer sports now, now that you just say that right here, because like you said, not to mention all the things that you do at Sal DeLong, but everything that's happening outside, this is really your chance and, you know, for your athletes to really compete at the highest levels. Just like you mentioned, you're returning home from the USA Fencing National Championships. But tell our listeners, Margaret, just your background and what you bring as a head coach as far as the experience and the levels that you've gone to compete on this sport, not just here across the country, but across the world.
Very briefly, my background, I had the higher certification in fencing in all the different disciplines of the sport. I am part of the United States Fencing Coaches Association, and not just part of the association, and the chair of the Accreditation and Certification Board. I am very involved with the United States Fencing Association as a mentor to bring new female coaches into our sport. So I am completely invested in all the way in the sport. This national championship that we went through brought over 6,200 fencers from all over the country. This is the biggest event in the world. There's no other event in the world that is of the level of this caliber. So this year was at Columbus, Ohio, for the length of 10 days, different age group, different categories. Sal DeLong brought 7 fencers, 9 fencers, including 2 veterans, including myself, because I also fence in one event.
Nice.
And we brought 2 medals back from Summit National.
Wow. I'm so excited to talk about that. And also talk about some of the shining stars that you were talking to me about off air. And they're joining us here today, which is great. Let's talk first about Isaiah Parker. He started at Sal DeLong in August of 2017 at just 7 years old. He also competes in Youth 14, Cadet Under 17, Junior Under 20, and Division 1 and Division 2 in foil and Apex. So tell us a little bit about Isaiah and what he brings and what you saw from him at the USA Fencing National Championships.
Fantastic performance. He fenced the first few dates on just one weapon that actually was very good in the way that he registered for this event. So he started with junior, then he fenced Division 1, and then cadet, and U14, that his age group. He performed really well in all of them. he definitely have very high expectation in the U14 men's B because that's his age group. And we did extremely well, especially when in the pool, in the round robin, that you had to fence up to 5 touches for it. You fence every single competitor in that pool. So you have a pool of 7, you fence 6 fences in that pool. And that's setting you up for what is coming next. That is the direct elimination. You talking in this event, some of them, I think there were 300 to 400 entries.
Wow.
I don't have exactly the numbers, but they're just unbelievable difficult. And the cut is just 256 fencer. So when you have an event that almost has over 400 plus, you basically cutting that almost in half.
Right, exactly.
So basically, if you don't do well in the pools, you cannot make the cut. So that was the main difference from us this year. This particular group, this is the second Summer National, and the goal was, first of all, to make the cut. And once you made the cut, then you start working toward the direct elimination, that is 15 touches bout against your opponent. And I will say all the fencers, they make at least 1, 2, and I believe some of them, they did up to the 3rd cut. So that's a remarkable difference from what I saw last year.
So let's bring him on right now. He's Isaiah Parker, and he joins us right now in studio. Isaiah, you heard your coach talk a little bit about you. We've talked a little bit off air, and just, you know, I was talking to you about just the sport itself. But what drew you to fencing in the first place, and why did you decide this sport?
So when I was a kid, you know, I did a lot of sports. I tried basically everything. And one of the movies that I used to watch as a kid was Star Wars. And so I watched that. I saw that when we were looking for summer camps, I saw there was a summer camp listing for one of the summer camps for the fencing, right? But I was too young. And so I think that definitely made me look into fencing more. And so then once I was old enough, I had already had sort of a little bit of a passion almost for fencing.
What do you think drives you now as far as being a fencer and competing at these high levels? Because that, we're talking about, you know, in doing this for enjoyment. Now, this has turned into something that you're taking seriously and very competitive at this level.
So, ever since I was a kid, I've been very competitive, right? And so, when I started fencing, you know, I started with just doing basic tournaments. But then I learned about FIE, which is the international level of fencing. And so once I started to learn about that, I started to push myself more, and that's definitely driven me. You know, that's definitely my goal, to compete at that international level.
Isaiah, you're 14 years old right now currently?
I am.
Okay, so tell me, what are your goals in this sport?
As I said earlier, I hope to compete at the international level and maybe someday at the Olympics.
That's awesome. Well, Isaiah, thank you so much for joining. This is awesome that you're here. And I wish you the best in your career. It seems like your ascension has been pretty high. And I'm ready to watch your career moving forward to see what you can do next year. We saw what you did this year at the USA Fencing National Championship. Can't wait to see what you do next year.
Thank you.
All right, Margaret. Now, and coming up next is Shelby Johnson. She started at Sal DeLong in December of 2020 at 12 years old. She competes in cadet under 17, junior under 20, and Division I and Division II in foil. So tell me a little bit about Shelby. What impresses you of her and what she's able to do here in the sport?
Actually, in addition to Division I and II, she also fenced Division III. Forgot to mention that.
Nice. That's excellent.
Yes. She has been amazing. She's a very quiet fencer. But when she's on the street, she just is a different person.
Really?
You know what we say? It's a different animal.
Yeah.
She put her fencing mask and she has a driven inside of her that is just amazing. She usually doesn't like people to be watching her when she fences, so that was quite interesting. She wants to have her coach there, and usually the dad is the one that videotape, but no spectators. Her brother made her very nervous, but when, you know, she, as I say, she's really, really strong when she get in the pool, and she definitely demonstrated that at nationals, especially in Division III, in which she actually got on the podium, and she got a national medal this year.
Wow!
Yeah,
okay.
So I'm very, very proud of her, as I'm of all my students, but her passion and her power on the strip is just amazing. And she stays focused the entire time. I don't know. With the girls, is maturity is a little bit different. It's a sport that is not just physical, but it's very mental. So girls do very well in that department. You know, they are more strategic. They have more like a strategic mind. So they approach the sport a little bit different.
Of course. Let's meet her now. Shelby, who's joining us here on the program. Shelby Johnson, who is joining us now. Shelby, you tell us what got you into fencing first, and why did this sport draw your attention here in the first place?
So my brother joined before me, and my dad used to do it in college, so he got us both into it.
Okay, so what are some of your goals in this sport right here?
Oh, I hope to get a scholarship so I can go to, and fence off into college.
That would be amazing, right? Now, tell us a little bit about being on the podium for the first time. That must have been incredible, just that feeling and knowing what kind of stage it was. I mean, you were at the USA National Championship level right there. And to be on the podium, you heard your coach talk about it. It's not just Division I and Division II, but Division III as well. And to be awarded and honored, what was that feeling like?
It was a really good feeling that I was just really proud of how I could get up there. So I felt really good and happy.
How do you feel you can improve in the sport? What are some of the things that you want to do as far as grow in the sport in the future?
Learn new actions and just push myself to a different level.
Well, Shelby, thank you so much for being a part of this, and I appreciate you doing this, and I'm excited to watch your career here in the future as you continue, okay? Now, I'm really excited for our youngest guest here on the show today, and Margaret, I'm really excited about you talking about her. Her name is Farida Taleb, and she started at Sal DeLong in June of 2021 at just 8 years old. She competes in Youth 10, 11, Youth 12, excuse me, and 14 in foil. Margaret, tell us a little bit about Farida and what she brings to the table.
Well, you can see she's just, in her age group is just 10, but you can see that she fences in 12 and 14. What does that tell you? That she doesn't see any opponent big enough for her. She's the biggest, and she's not afraid to fence the 14 girls, and she's not afraid to fence the 12. She, since the time that she started, she's one of the most consistent fencers at the Sal. She doesn't miss no practice. She work with the competitive fencers Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and Tuesday and Thursday. She also attend classes with other coaches. We have practice on Saturday, and she's there as well. She is blessed to have parents that support her all the way. All my kids do. But they take her everywhere that she wants to go. And when she can't go, she just give a really hard time to her ma. Is that right, Farida?
Well, let's meet her right now. Farida Taleb, who's joining us right now. Farida, thanks for joining us. Being in this sport can feel very intimidating, I feel. I mean, I went to the Sal myself, and I was like, all right, this is a monster in itself, so I have a lot of respect for you all to begin with. But for you at a young age, what drew you to this sport? What do you enjoy about fencing?
So I started because I was watching videos in YouTube, and it looked very cool to me, so I wanted to start and try it.
That's awesome. Now tell me, how old are you?
I'm 11.
So you've been doing this since you're 8. You're in this for 3 years now. What do you enjoy most about the fencing and maybe being in this big in a big match like this?
It feels I feel excited when I'm about to fence. It makes me feel happy, so I would be excited once I put my mask on and start fencing.
Tell me a little bit about your coach over here, Margaret. What does she do for you and kind of the confidence in building you up and being the fencer that you are?
She's a very good coach, and she's really supportive, and she's doing her best. So she is why I'm right here today and why I'm doing so well.
Well, Farida, thank you so much. You were awesome today, and I can't believe you're doing this at just 11 years old. That's amazing.
Thank you.
Awesome stuff. Well, Margaret, you have such a great team here. I'm so appreciative of you all stopping by. Before we let you go, I want to let everybody know it's elpasofencing.org. You could check out all the latest with Sal DeLong Fencing School. And I want you to also mention that you could check them out on Facebook and Instagram at Sal DeLong as well to learn about all the stuff they have and just see what they offer. But Margaret, you all are having a camp, right? Two camps right around the corner, excuse me, here for the summer. But that's what the summer's all about, camps and having fun and introducing new people or having veterans return back to the mix for the sport of fencing.
Yeah, so summer camps are one of the big events during the summer for us. We did one in June and was very successful. We have about 13 kids in the camp. And the beauty about it that I always have my coaches that help me to work with different age group. And such a sport is more like a one-on-one. We definitely provide that to our campers. So these two camps, right now registration is still open. Our next week camp is getting really heavy.
Okay.
We have right now, and I say heavy because for us, having 15, 20 kids in a camp is a huge thing.
I believe it.
And the reason is because one coach would like to work with no more than 10 kids at a time. It's not like other sport that they're teen sport that when you offer a camp, you can have 50 kids and you can have one coach and everybody's running behind the ball. This is completely different. Every day is different. The first day they get introduced to the sport playing with fencing noodles. And every day they learn a different discipline, foil, épée, and sabre. And so they learn the basic rules and regulations, as you said, rules of the sport, and how to perform that. And that's how the kids have a well-rounded knowledge of the sport. And many of them, as a matter of fact, they ask me, Coach, can I do just this weapon after? And that's how we introduce the sport. We talk about the history of the sport, how actually fencing started. And then the last day of the camp, we invite all the parents, family members, friends, to see to the demonstration of the kids in the sport. So they had the ability to be on the stage and show what they learned throughout the week.
That's amazing. It sounds like a great camp. It sounds extensive, and it sounds like people will learn a lot if they do it for the first time. Ages for the camp?
6 all the way to 14, 15. I have kids pretty much up to 15, 16 years old.
Okay. Best way to learn about the camp is?
You can reach up to the website. The days are there. You can actually have an email, saldelon@gmail.com. All my number is also listed in there. Many people reach me by just calling and asking information about the camp.
Perfect. That number is 915-346-4338 for Sal DeLong Fencing School. Margaret, it's so great to see you. I'm so happy that we're talking more success. And then next time, you're going to be bringing double this. You're going to be bringing 6 fencers over here because of all the medals that you all are going to be hoisting. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I'm super excited about next coming national championship. And not just about that, but the entire season. This group is going to go through their third season in the sport. The confidence is really strong. if the training is there in a consistent basis, I know that we can reach really high goals.
Hey, Paris is coming up right around the corner.
Yes.
And that's just motivation for these young fencers, right?
I'm going to tell you, I have two fencers that they're actually going to Paris.
No way.
Yes, Farida is one of them. She's going to see the semifinal and the finals
of
the women foil. And United States have an amazing team. And Isaiah Parkett also is going to go and watch the Olympic and also participate in a summer camp in Paris.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. This is going to be true motivation right there. Well, Margaret, again, great to see you. And we'll talk soon, okay?
Thank you, Adrian.
Margaret DeLong from Sal DeLong Fencing School. You can check him out again. It is online at elpasofencing.org. We'll take a break right now. More of Sports Talk as we continue here on 600 ESPN El Paso. All right, hour number two of Sports Talk is underway. Sebastian Perez Navarro, Zay Galindo, you just heard him on SportsCenter, and then Michael Plundo, we're all in the building today. Busy Friday afternoon, and it gets busier on our Longhorn Distributing Hotline as we continue. Joe Rod is joining us next. Joe Rodriguez, you could read his newest article up on our website, 600ESPNElPaso.com. And by the way, while you're there, check out Sebastian's latest article talking about John Cena's farewell. Here in this first segment, we're going to talk a little soccer, and we'll especially hit on some Locomotive FC and some FC Juarez soccer. That's all coming up right now. Joe, it's great to talk to you after some time, man. How's everything going?
Adrian, boys, what's going on, man? It's good to be back on the air here. A nice little summer afternoon on a Friday here in El Paso, just getting here to Southwest University Park for tonight's big match, Locomotive against the Las Vegas Lights. Started the second half of the season for this El Paso side.
Does it feel like Christmas in July? Does the weather feel like Christmas in July at Southwest University Park right now?
You know, I don't know how I've felt about the concept of Christmas in July. But yeah, man, it's getting the spirit. Hopefully try some of this food that they have here on the menu for tonight for the Christmas in July theme. They're going to be giving t-shirt giveaways.
The shirts look great.
A nice little Christmas themed ugly sweater t-shirt that looks sweet. I just got shown one right now here, and they're nice, and it's going to be good, man. People are going to be excited for that, as they always are, and hopefully an exciting locomotive soccer match.
Well, hopefully an exciting second half of the season, right? That's where I'll start, man, because first half of the season was about as disastrous as you could ask for. A changing of the guard, just losing left and right to start things off. And it's up to this point right now where Locomotive FC, they still find themselves as one of the worst teams in the USL. I mean, tell me realistically, Joe, what do we expect from this team in the second half right here?
Honestly, what do we expect from this team? I can tell you this much. This front office staff, the players, and the coaching staff expect a significant turnaround, as they should, Adrian. The fact of the matter remains is that if you break down this roster, if you break down the players on this roster, this team isn't built to just barely make the playoffs. This seems to be built to be a contender in this league. Obviously, unfortunately, right now, the way the first half of the season developed, they're in dead last as far as their conference goes. But I think this team still has plenty of time to turn things around. I still think that they have the components to turn everything around. And for, going into the second half of the season, Adrian, they have 12 points on the season. Ironically enough, they play a Las Vegas team tonight that is taking up the last slot in the playoff standings, and they're at 24 points. So, the Locomotive have quite a amount of points to make up to move up the conference standings, but I think they have everything that you could ask for to be able to accomplish such a thing.
You're right. I mean, I've seen this roster. We see them play at higher levels. I mean, it's evident, with all the guys who are going on loan right now and who are coming back maybe in the mix. I'm also curious with the roster. How fluid do you believe this roster is going to look here? Could we see the same group? I mean, is it crazy to think that we're going to see a different group here tonight compared to what we're going to see maybe in 2 weeks against New Mexico United?
It's been brought to my attention that this group of players has been spoken to. On Tuesday we had during media availability with head coach Wilber Cabrera, and I asked him, I go, what's the mental mindset? What's the mindset? What's the mental status of this team over this 2 week break going into the second half of the season? And he didn't hesitate to tell me that he feels at this point that has been the problem for this team this season is in the mental part of their confidence. They're all individually they're all great players, but it just hasn't come together on the field of play for them as a whole, as a team, and individually they're struggling. So the mindset has to change, and I think tonight here in a little less than 2 hours, hopefully it'll be the start of that.
Yeah, I hope so too, man, and I hope for the fans too. I mean, this is an organization right here that's really they love to support their soccer club, and when this team is humming, the crowd will really reflect that. Now on the flip side, you don't want this one to fall in a poor end in a poor result. Joe, just knowing that they've got New Mexico United right around the corner, and that team loves to travel. You talked about standings. New Mexico United, number one right now, top in the Western Conference, first place with 34 points.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And a win tonight, Adrian, would go a long way to build some momentum for that New Mexico United game that you are mentioning. And I think everyone that is attached to this organization feels that this team and this club and this organization is right now indebted in a big way to this fan base. They haven't won a single game all season long here at home. And, you have to look at where we're at, not just in the season, Adrian, but you also have to realize where we're at in the calendar year as far as El Paso sports go here in about a month and a half. I know UTEP football and UTEP athletics is going to try and take away some of that attention from the Locomotive, and I know that the only way that you can combat that at this point of the year is for this team to start stringing some performances where they start accumulating points and start to legitimately get back into the playoff race.
Joe Rodriguez joining us right now. Check out his story on our website right now, 600ESPNElPaso.com. Locos look for fresh start as second half of the season begins. Meanwhile, Bravos travel to Toluca. Joe, we've talked a lot with Alberto about this on the program, but your reaction to everything, the madness that ensued on the field with FC Juarez and Club America a couple weeks back, I mean, this is something that's old news now, but you know, you're one of our soccer experts here on this show. You tell me, I mean, I see what happened there, and then I see the news, or you read the news about Colombia in the Copa America, and that's just so troubling for me as just a sports fan, man. Like, in the sport of soccer, that it can get to that level, it's not a great thing at all.
Yeah, no. Well, I can't really speak to the whole thing that happened with Colombia at the Colombia game here earlier this week for the Copa America semifinal. The thing that I am aware of is the reason why, and all of the players for Colombia have been very adamant, the players for Uruguay that have been very adamant about this, is the fact that the reason they went into the stands is because there was loved ones there that were being badgered, some of them with children that were in arms of their moms. So things got very passionate very quickly. So that's all I can say about that. Now, as far as what happened at the Bravos Club America game at the Sumbul, obviously the situation just kind of got out of hand. I don't think anybody suspected that the behavior of that fan base, which was a Club America fan base, take it for what it's worth, they saw an opportunity and they took advantage, and then, you know, when one person makes a bad decision and then all of a sudden the collective crowd gets behind it. One thing I can tell you right now, and if you know, their track record shows it, the organizers of this event, which were Mountain Star Sports Group, they will most definitely learn from it. And you can pretty much bet that in the future, when big soccer teams come to play FC Juarez in the Sun Bowl, which you can pretty much guarantee it's pretty much going to happen again, because that event was beyond successful,
right,
for everyone involved. When it does happen again, all of the steps will be taken, so we don't have a repeat incident.
So tell me where FC Juarez is right now, in your opinion. This is, you saw what obviously happened at home just recently, the 2-2 draw against Atlas. I thought they should have won that game, man. I really felt like that was a golden opportunity for them to get a win at home. So now they're going to go on the road, taking on Toluca, and they got to get some points here as the season continues, because nothing gets easy for the Bravos here moving forward.
Yeah, no, absolutely. For FC Juarez, you know, they had a wonderful showing, a great season opener last Friday here at Benito Juarez Olympic Stadium, 2-2 draw against Atlas. It was a situation where they couldn't hold the lead on two occasions. But, the most obvious thing that can be said about this team is the fact that this team is improving, and is improving steadily with every single passing day, with every single passing week, under the direction of new technical director and head coach Mauricio Barberi. This team is really coming into its own, and I think it's definitely poised to improve on what has been the last handful of dismal seasons for FC Juarez. There's no way to deny that. But yeah, no, absolutely. You start the season off and you almost get the win. It didn't come to be, but this Saturday night they're going to be playing Toluca, a team that is historically tough at home. Regardless of how bad that team may be, it's still a tough match to go into the state of Mexico in the center part of Mexico there in Toluca and play them. But I think right now FC Juarez, I think another draw this coming Saturday would give them a whole lot of confidence into what's going to be a very tough upcoming week, Adrian. That's one thing I forgot to put into my article, is you have Toluca, Adrian, on Saturday. Then this coming Wednesday, they face Pumas. And then the following weekend, they play Club America once again. Both of those games are going to be here at Benito Juarez Olympic Stadium, and those games count. So you're going to have a tough three-game stretch here for FC Juarez, where you're really going to find out quickly what this team is made of early in the season.
You know, it's real interesting, man, because I just look at from what the expectations were about a year ago, or maybe a little bit more, from where we were with FC Juarez, and now it seems like maybe the improvements are getting there. We're starting to see some of the results come their way. However, they gotta string along some wins or some draws, like you were mentioning. A draw would do so much for their confidence. I'm just curious what happens here moving forward, man. If you had a crystal ball prediction here in the next week, all right, you just reeled off all the games that they have, and I want your record prediction of what it's gonna look like. Like, what do you feel like they get out of next week? You know, if they're playing a little bit better or if they're improving a little bit better, like kind of we're alluding to here.
Obviously, Adrian, going into a week where you're gonna dispute a total of 9 points, three matches. Total of three points per match if you win. So 9 points are up for grabs starting tomorrow. Then the Wednesday match here against Pumas. Then the following weekend, the match against Club America. So you got 9 points. I would like to predict, Adrian, that I would say 5 points would be magnificent. Maybe two draws and a win. I think that's very doable.
Okay.
I think that'll be very good. 5 out of 9 points, like I said, a win and two draws, I think would be fantastic, especially against the teams that they're going up against. The schedule for FC Juarez this season is it's front loaded. The biggest teams, the toughest teams, the teams that are traditional powerhouses in Mexico soccer are the teams that FC Juarez is going to face early in this part of the season. So, you know, it's they're being thrown in the deep end of the swimming pool to start off the 2024 Apertura season.
Okay, give me the final question here. Give me your Euro pick. Give me your Copa pick here for this weekend.
Oh, that was easy. Without hesitation at all whatsoever, I'm going England and I'm going Colombia.
Wow. No Messi, no Argentina. I like it.
You know what, man? I got to say, the whole Messi coming to the MLS has just, and now he's, as much as I wanted him to win the World Cup, and he did, and I thought it was awesome, and I was a big fan about that. Now that he's moved to the MLS, and now I just kind of like, okay, I'm over it. I want to see somebody else win. And I kind of stopped cheering for that guy. Just the whole MLS thing.
That's totally understandable. Totally understandable, man.
I think it's a Messi fatigue now that the MLS has their golden, has their golden child, and they're trying to constantly ram it down everybody's throat. I think it's just it's too much for me.
So maybe we need to subtract some of the Argentina teams so he could start being like Patrick Mahomes, and we can start thinking, man, I have a little fatigue of rooting for this guy, but man, what he's doing is pretty amazing. What about that?
There's no denying that he is awesome. It is a privilege, Adrian, to see him, to be able to play. Without a doubt, but no, I think Colombia would be a great story, and not only that, I would love to be able to ask head coach for the Locomotive, Wilber Cabrera.
Oh yes,
he's Colombian. I'm hoping for a win tonight, so I can casually ask him his thoughts about Sunday, and then hopefully, if Colombia wins, then on Tuesday during media availability, I can ask him how he lived that experience on Sunday. So that's another reason why I'm pulling for Colombia in the interest of journalism.
Nice. Let's do it, man. Let's do it. I like it. Well, hey, I'm looking forward to all the coverage tonight, Joe. Check out Joe Rodriguez on our website. It's 600ESPNElPaso.com, the Locomotive FC, and the FC Juarez preview. Great local content up on the site right now, talking some soccer. And he joins us here on our Longhorn Distributing Hotline. Also, follow him on Instagram at JRodInThe915, or at JRod915, excuse me, on Twitter and X. For his coverage tonight out for the Locomotive FC. As always, Joe, it's great to talk to you. And hey, we're right around the corner, Football Friday night.
Absolutely. Totally looking forward to that. You know it.
Awesome, man. Good stuff. Hey, we're going to take a timeout right now. When we come back, more sports talk here on 600 ESPN El Paso. All right, we are back here. Sports Talk continues. Hour number two. We got Tim Haggerty on deck, top of the hour. He'll give us story time, as always. We're at 600 ESPN El Paso on Twitter next and 600ESPNElPaso.com as well. Sebastian Pettis Novato, he's with us right now. He wrote an article talking about John Cena's farewell. The retirement tour is going to be happening next year. Sebastian, give our listeners a little preview as to what they can expect about your story. You've been writing a lot of guest columns for us talking wrestling. I'm not the wrestling guy. Steve's the wrestling guy, but you're the wrestling guy here with us now. You tell us a little bit, give us a preview of this story right here and why you decided to write this column here.
So in their July premium live event, the WWE held it all the way in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And that was the perfect place for John Cena, according to his words in his promo, to announce that he was retiring from the WWE. First, let's talk about why he decided to retire over there. He told the audience of Canada that whether the WWE was down or if they were the hottest ticket in town, Canada was always there, which he found it the perfect place to announce that in 2025, it would be his farewell tour, claiming that that year's Royal Rumble, Elimination Chamber, and WrestleMania would be his last. Now, something that's interesting that John Cena also elaborated on during the press conference is that he's not retiring after WrestleMania 40, and said he plans on retiring until December, ultimately saying that he plans to work 30 and 40 days throughout the entire year, obviously conflicting with one very big part of John Cena's life, Hollywood. But he plans to balance both. Obviously, there's lots of questions on how a 47-year-old John Cena can possibly balance both. But ultimately, the biggest thing right now running through wrestling fans' heads, it's what's professional wrestling going to look like without John Cena? Because obviously, many people didn't like him before, but he's still been the face of a professional wrestling company for years on end now, whether polarizing and controversial or beloved. But one of the main things that we know is that 2025 is the last time we'll see the phenomenon in a professional ring being active. And quite frankly, we need to treasure that time, because wrestling fans have been mean to John Cena. And it's something that I went into dug deep inside the article. Frankly, John Cena hasn't always been loved or beloved by the wrestling community because he's been the WWE's superstar. But the wrestling demographic, being a majority older than little kids, well, frankly, they saw right past John Cena and decided to revolt against the face of the franchise. But now that it's become more rare, more people have begun to love him. And ultimately, it focuses and centralizes on one main thing. We have John Cena for one more year. It's time to enjoy what Cena brings to the table in professional wrestling.
I like it, man. Check it out, 600ESPNElPaso.com. That's up on our website right now. Talking John Cena's farewell announcement. It shocks WWE fans, reflecting on his journey and his impact on his wrestling life. That is all up right now, 600ESPNElPaso.com. Zay, I want to get your thoughts on this one right here. We found out today that the Pac-12 is going to keep all their bowl ties. And this is also going to include teams like Oregon State and Washington State right here. So the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl could get some of the similar teams right here that they typically get. I'm curious as to what the future looks like. You know, Brett Yormark earlier this week in Big 12 Media Days was talking about affiliations, and he was already alluding to his ties, or he was really highlighting his ties with Las Vegas and stuff like that. So I wonder if El Paso is part of the expansion or the plans here in the future.
You know, I definitely hope so, right? See some Big 12 teams here. Maybe, you know, we get to see old Conference USA foes back in the Sun Bowl, Central Florida, Houston, teams like that.
Wow, that's interesting. Okay, so if you had a preference list, what would you choose as far as the conference go? Would you go immediately? I mean, hey, I was around. I remember the days when the Sun Bowl had the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl had the affiliation with the Big Ten. So you saw the Purdue's of the world and stuff like that coming out here. So I remember when that happened. What would your priority list be?
Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to the Big Ten, of course, that huge conference. I think 18 teams now in the Big 12. I mean, the most interesting conference to me will remain the Big 12 because I don't know how to explain it. It looks so random, fun. You know, the chance for parity is really high in the Big 12. You're going to have a lot of different personalities clashing. Of course, you got Dion in Colorado, but I mean, you have so much more, and I'm really excited. So I'd like to see the Big 12 one day.
Okay, I like it. I mean, I think that there's not a lot of precedent there, but if they've already got the affiliations now, especially if the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl can land one of these teams right now, that'll bode really well for them, you know, making a case to try to pursue that conference as maybe an affiliate here in the future. But at least for now, we know this. This came out today that Oregon State and Washington State will stay with the same bowl partners that they've had in the past. And, yeah, we'll see what happens here moving forward. I mean, this year's going to be so weird, guys. Like, it gets started next week with College Football 25, but you think about it, the 12-team playoff, like, that really hasn't settled in with me. The fact that realignment's really going to take shape this year like it's never before, Michael, and now we're going to really see different teams all across the board. I'm going to embrace it, but there's just going to be a lot of changes in college football that we're going to see this year.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready for these changes, to be honest. I mean, it's just going to be weird to kind of just see this, you know, 12-team playoff format now happen, and now you got NCAA coming back to video games. It's what a world we're living in right now, Adrian Shirley. And I'm sorry,
what's the best Texas Tech home game? We've talked about this before. It's Prime, right? Colorado and Prime.
Oh, I got that game circled on my calendar. I am making time for that, and I cannot wait to go see that game live with a couple of buddies of mine. And it's just going to be really cool to see a legendary coach who was at it for a long time in the NFL and Coach Prime, and then his son at quarterback and Travis Hunter. I'm really excited.
Yeah, and his other son, right? Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting because with a team like Colorado coming to town, that changes your trajectory of your home schedule. It's like, wow, we can get so excited that we've got a team like that here coming to this area. What are some of the other – do you remember some of the other home games that might be on the Tech schedule that you're kind of circling and getting excited about? I mean, the fact that, like, we're seeing a whole new brand of Big 12 football, I'm just trying to really hammer that home, and it's a reflection of all of the real conference realignment. It should make for a really interesting college football season, just period.
I will say Baylor and Texas Tech is always one to look forward to. My freshman year, that was when Patrick Mahomes was inducted into the Texas Tech Hall of Fame. One of the best games I've ever been to. Unfortunately, Texas Tech lost that game, but it was still cool to really see that live, and I had never seen Mahomes live in person up until that point. Another game I'm looking forward to is West Virginia coming back to Lubbock. Those two have really butt heads the last couple of years, and with Taj Brooks returning and him having a career game against them a couple years ago, that's one to look forward to, especially with it being the last game of the season. And Arizona State also will be coming to Lubbock. That'll be an interesting one. So, yeah, I mean, Tech has got a really interesting schedule, really looking at it, you know, in depth.
I like it. I like it. Let's move on. I want to ask you some baseball questions, Michael. It's a big baseball weekend. We're really heating things up. Astros have kind of turned things around as of late. They've won 7 of their last 10, 3 in a row. There was no, in my opinion, no cause for concern. However, there is cause for concern with the Rangers. I still don't know, even though they've won 7 of their last 10, they've been playing a little bit better. Is it too late? Is it a little too late right here for this Rangers squad who's 7.5 games back from the wild card race?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's completely over yet, but if the Rangers do want to have any type of, you know, hope or chance to get into the playoffs, they got to start stirring in some winning, you know. They got to get some good winning here going, like a couple games of a winning streak, like a 5-game winning streak, 6-game, whatever it is, this team has got to start winning. I understand that, you know, there's injuries and, you know, the hangover of winning the title is kind of hitting into effect there, but the Rangers really got to stir up some winning streaks here because it is a competitive race and it's not going to get much easier, especially entering the bottom half of the season.
Mets have won 3 in a row. I don't know what that NL wildcard race really is going to shape out to look like. I mean, we talked to Jeff Erickson just yesterday, or just 2 days ago, about this. The Nationals, they're 6 games back, and they're totally not out of the mix either, even though they've lost 5 in a row. Cubs have suddenly won 4 in a row. They're totally in the mix at just 3 games back. So the NL wild card, and of course, can't forget about your Pirates. Can't forget about the Diamondbacks, who went all the way last year. Can't forget about the Padres, who are tied with the Mets right now for that wild card final spot. So that NL side for the wild card is just the most exciting race here to wind up. And hey, we're about that halfway point. We're getting to All-Star break next week, and we're going to really get to see, you know, who really rises to the top after the All-Star break.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I'm, of course, excited to see my boy Skeens as he was announced the starter for the National League. I'm really excited to see the All-Star game. But the Mets, I mean, how about them? They've really, you know, turned it around. They're in playoff position for the first time since May 9th. I mean, that's really impressive. But I'm really curious to see what they do with Pete Alonso. And Steve would probably have a better answer there. But I would want to see what they do. Are they going to keep him? Are they going to trade him? I mean, what's his future looking like in, you know, New York? And now with the Mets going on this winning streak here, you know, their opinions might have changed than what it was about 2 months ago.
I feel like he means so much to that organization and fan base that it would be tough for them to deal him away, for Pete Alonso to go away. But still, it's hard to tell. I don't know what will happen when it's all said and done. It's going to be real interesting to look at. Any other storylines you're looking at for this weekend out of Major League Baseball?
I'm paying attention closely with, you know, of course, the trade deadline coming up late July. I'm paying closely attention to Angels infielder Taylor Ward. His name has been brought up in a lot of conversations, and a lot of teams out there could use some outfield help. I mean, the Pirates have already been in discussions with the Angels, but we'll see if they actually go through with it, because you know, they're not really that type of team to make moves like that. Their last notable move was for Chris Archer a couple years ago that blew up right in their face. So maybe they, you know, they're taking that with caution. But I'm really curious to see where Taylor Ward ends up. Jazz Chisel, maybe Josh Bell will be thrown around again, but it'll be a really cool trade deadline.
Yeah, it's heating up, man. It's right around the corner. Who's going to be buyers? Who's going to be sellers right here? It seems like the Rays are totally out of the mix. They're going to be selling big time, but regardless, just going to be a lot of fun to see this trade deadline heat up.
Absolutely.
Let's keep it moving. Our telephone number, 915-505-6009. I want to also mention that, hey, before we get to our break, Palo Verde Homes, this is the only home builder in town that we trust here on Sports Talk. Want to talk to you a little bit about the great people over there at Palo Verde Homes. They've been in business for 17 years. They were opened in 2007. They've delivered over 2,300 homes to El Paso families, and they build in communities all across town, east, west, northeast, Horizon, and Socorro. In fact, they offer different home elevations like Spanish, Tuscan, Contemporary, and everybody's favorite, the farmhouse elevation. Check out their great online reviews. Check them out on Instagram at Palo Verde Homes, or check them out online, paloverdehome.com. Hey, we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, more Sports Talk here Friday afternoon on 600 ESPN El Paso. All right, we are winding up hour number two, and then we've got Tim Haggerty on deck here coming up. And right at 6, he's going to deliver story time, and then we're going to get right out to the ballpark for the first pitch. The first pitch should actually be closer to, this is just a programming note, closer to 6:10 here coming up very soon. Let me show you this one, Zay, or I'm going to tell you this story. Right now there's NBA Summer League, and I was telling you this off air. I don't know how many UTEP players are in Summer League. Summer League's tough to find the roster information, all that kind of stuff. Sule Boom previously played for the Denver Nuggets organization, and they play tonight in Summer League basketball. So maybe save some time, Zay, and watch that one so you could try to spot and see if you can see a little Sule Boom. What do you think? Can you make some time to watch some Denver Nuggets Clippers? Maybe a little Sule Boom versus Bryson Williams? 10 o'clock tonight? Are we doing this?
You know,
I hope so.
You know, it's a Friday night, you know. Most people have plans, but I am going to be watching the ever so hyped up matchup between Sule Boom and Bryson Williams. Hopefully it's a matchup. We don't even know if they're going to play.
Okay, I'm looking at it right now. Bryson's actually in the Canadian Elite Basketball League with the Saskatchewan Rattlers. However, when Summer League starts, usually these guys who are on these like loans, so to speak, they go back. Now remember, Bryson played for a Canadian team last year in the offseason too. Either if he's doing this to collect a check, that's one thing, and that's pretty cool. I would think that's a cool thing. Like, hey, my offseason, I'm actually still playing pro basketball. I'm still cashing a check for this kind of stuff. But if it's not, and if it's just for him to get better, then that's also good. Like, it's a win-win situation right here for whatever reason he's doing this. But I hope that's the case. I hope there's more former minors in the NBA Summer League here moving forward. It's always cool to, like, turn on a random Sacramento Kings game and see Isaiah Crawford from Louisiana Tech, a guy that we've seen year over year, or a guy like Kenneth Lofton Jr., who can't really find his right roster or the roster that's right for him. Is he now with Utah, Zay? Am I wrong on that?
I'm not sure. Every time, you know, it'll be towards the end of the season, we'll get our Kenneth Lofton game where he's dropping,
right,
you know, 30 points, 15
in an actual
rebounds,
game.
And people are losing their minds, talking about why didn't he play all year. You know, he just, I don't know. I don't know what's up with him.
Utah, that is exactly where he's at. And he averaged 4 points a game last year in, like we were talking about, pretty much garbage time minutes, or just the garbage part of the season for Utah when they're purposely trying to tank. Michael Plundo's with us. Michael, you ready for the weekend? What's going on right now?
I'm ready for the weekend. You know, I don't know how you could not be ready for the weekend. I mean, it's the best time of the week, but really, I'm just, you know, I want football back, Adrian. I want it back badly, you know. We're kind of getting close to training camp, so I'm really excited for that. But life without football ever since, you know, the Super Bowl ended, it's not been fun. And college football, we need that too.
I feel like the need for football is real right now, but this is the time of year. It's kind of like those dog days of summer where you're really just hoping for football. We got preseason football action before you know it, which is, that's exciting in itself right there. Zay, how much WNBA are you watching nowadays, or these days, I should say? Angel Reese, she's now at 14 games for a double-double. It's amazing. I've loved what I've seen so far this year in all the clips. I feel like we see highlights all the time on social media. How much WNBA basketball are you watching right now?
Definitely watch a lot. I watch my good amount, you know what I mean? My favorite team, the Atlanta Dream, this is supposed to be the all-in year, and now they're 7 games under 500. So it's been a rough year for me to watch women's basketball, at least my team. But outside of it, I mean, the sport has grown. It's great to see. And Angel Reese, I mean, she's a beast. You can say what you want. She'll get the hate. She is a good player. She's an athletic demon who, you know, just, she's hard to fight down in the low post.
An athletic demon that's hard to fight down low in the post. That's an interesting way of putting it there. But you're right. Like, the way that she's come on the scene, she has all the star power right there. I, as a basketball player, she's a baller. Like, I really like watching what she does. And I also like watching Kayla Thornton. We're talking former UTEP players with the New York Liberty. She's playing relevant basketball for a really good team. Kayla Thornton, 9 games started, 23. She's played all 23 games for New York, and just playing a vital role for them, doing kind of whatever, kind of the glue girl for them. She is 6 points. She's averaging 2 rebounds and almost averages a steal every single game, but doesn't, you know, stats don't really reflect her impact on that team right there.
Yeah, I mean, she is a, like you said, she's a glue guy. She's a three and D type of player, right? She can hit the three ball. She's a versatile defender. She can do just so much for a contending team. These are the types of, you know, she's the type of player that you want on a team that's contending for a championship.
And I'm snoozing over here as Bronny just made a nice little layup there. Say, there we go. Cuts to the basket. No, it was a dunk. Yeah, a forceful dunk. My like NBA upside pick for Bronny to become is like a mix between like a Marcus Smart, you know, if he's kind of like a stingy defensive guard, or maybe he could transition to like a smaller guard that likes to shoot, maybe like a Josh Hart, something like that. Sebastian, we talked a lot about Bronny right there, and now he's you know, getting a chance to do it here for the Lakers Summer League team against the Rockets. This one's going on right now on ESPN.
Adrian, I got to bum you out just a little bit right now because when the game started, you missed it. Bronny was having a little bit of a rough time, per se. He was dribbling the ball, then he gets it stolen and then a layup on him. So he's coming off a couple of rough games, obviously, in his first non-official Summer League game in the California Classic. He only put up 3 points. He was the talk of the town on ESPN, and obviously centering around him is nepotism within the National Basketball Association. Obviously, the media is having a frenzy with both Bronny and LeBron James playing. But you have to question, especially with how young Bronny is, especially with the medical background that he has, and the one season in USC, what's going on through the young man's mentality? Because we all feel pressure on any occupation, but now Bronny James is playing with possibly the second best player in all of basketball history. And then, add on top of that, he has to deal with proving himself, because many people believe that he just got the job because of his dad.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And that's going to carry with him. Look, he could be playing. I'm not joking. He could be playing in the NBA Finals, and people will still bring that up. I mean, that's just, unfortunately, Bronny's legacy. And it'll carry with him throughout the rest of his career. Like, is this going to also happen when Bryce gets into the NBA? If he gets into the NBA, Zay? I hope it doesn't. I hope we're able to rid of some of these narratives right there and see the players for what they are. But, hey, I mean, face value, if you're not a true sports fan or if you're somebody who casually watches this, yeah, you're going to, like Sebastian's saying there, you're going to result to thinking, well, he just got there because LeBron was, at the Lakers, which is true. I'm not going to lie. It's the case. He got paid because he's LeBron's son. That's the case. But can we just celebrate this for just a great sports moment for once instead of criticizing everything?
Yeah, you know, for me, I just want to see Bronny succeed, and I want to see Bronny succeed, become a, you know, vital role player in the NBA, because that's what he can be. Like you said, he can be a Marcus Smart type of guy. He can be maybe even Avery Bradley type
Ooh,
of guy.
Oh, nice name.
He seems like, you know, he has the upside to be a rotational piece on a championship team, because he brings the shooting. He brings the defense he is smaller, right, at a guard, but still, I want to see him prove the narratives wrong, prove the haters wrong, and yes, I mean, he's LeBron's son, so it'll go with him throughout his year. Even if he becomes an all-star, he's still going to be,
right.
He's only an all-star because he's LeBron's son.
You're
that's
right.
How it is. That's just how it is for him, but I hope he can prove him wrong.
Connect is also, to talk other Lakers Summer League players who can actually play this year right away. Dalton Connect is a really vital piece so far. I mean, look, Summer League, you take it for what it is, right? Like, Bronny's getting a bunch of shots early. He's already had 5 attempts. That's what they want. Like, they want to see in these games, like, who can actually run. On the other side, I'm looking at the Rockets and thinking, man, Cam Whitmore, this is pretty fun. Reed Shepard, like, yeah, this is definitely one after this show I'm going to lock in on. Rockets Lakers going on right now, NBA Summer League. And if you're a UTEP fan, maybe stay tuned tonight for that late game, Nuggets and then the Clippers, and see if we get a little Sule Boom, Bryson Williams. We'll see if that ends up being the case. But hey, let's take a timeout right now. When we come back, it's story time with Tim Haggerty, and then we'll get out to the ballpark and get ready for the game right here on 600 ESPN El Paso. All right, welcome in. It is story time with the voice of the El Paso Chihuahuas, Tim Haggerty, who will grace our radio station with another edition of Story Time.
I'm speaking to you today from Oklahoma and wanted to tell you about Oklahoma's Bermuda Triangle. That's what they call Beaver Dunes Park up in Oklahoma's Panhandle. It's a vast park with sand dunes. It's a popular place for ATVs and dune buggies. It's also the site of mysteries dating back to the 1500s. The explorer Coronado noted in his journal that some of his men disappeared from this area after seeing flashing bright green lights.
Ah, okay, you're right up my alley.
Yes, Native Americans in this area reportedly wouldn't go anywhere near this park for centuries. Some websites claim a UFO once crashed on this site, and campers have reported seeing men in military uniforms digging in there in the middle of the night. Guys, Oklahoma's a great place, but I'm staying away from Oklahoma's Bermuda Triangle.
Wow. I'm looking at this right now. Tim, there's a lot of different places and a lot of different stories. There's one that says a sinister story, and actually this is one with Beaver Dunes in Oklahoma. There's one right now, Shaman's Portal, also within this Bermuda. This is pretty scary right here, Tim, but I like this stuff. In fact, we've talked a little Marfa Lights in the past before, families from that area right there from Marfa. So I like these little, like, lights that you can see in the night sky, or are you one of those people who just does not want to see any of those kind of supernatural kind of occurrences?
I would love to see Marfa lights. I still have not gone there. The thing that's spooky about this one is the reports of people disappearing
right
with the bright lights. That's when it takes on a new element.
That's true, and I feel like I'm reading the story right now. Visitors camping have reported seeing, like, military, like you were saying, the people digging in the middle of the night. That would freak me out, just seeing, like, random things like that. Like, that seems so specific, Tim, that you can't really make any of that up.
Exactly, and, these days with the online forums and the Facebook comments on certain articles, there were various comments from people about odd things they've seen or heard when camping there. It makes you wonder.
You know, Tim, I got to shift it over because, this was an excellent story time. I have to say, this isn't necessarily a story time, but Carson Haggerty's performance in the booth. And I think this is more like a school time with Carson Haggerty that he had on air with you recently. The Chihuahua social media team had posted that everywhere. And, man, I love that video because Carson, not only is he bright, but he also has a great way with words, man. I love the way that he displayed that little lesson, that little nugget that he learned out of school.
Yeah, thank you. You can check out Chihuahua's social media. They posted it yesterday. We've developed this tradition the past 4 years. Around Father's Day, my son has joined me for one inning. His latest obsession is sunken ships. He can tell you everything about the Titanic, the Britannic, the Lusitania. He tells me I say that wrong. I think I said it right, Lusitania. And yes, on the Chihuahua social media post, he talks about this employee changeover and somebody left their binoculars in a drawer. And basically, there's this report from some credible places that had the watchman up on the crow's nest had these binoculars. They might have seen the iceberg sooner and maybe could have turned out of the way. This horrific tragedy of the Titanic maybe could have been avoided.
Wow, that's so interesting. Hey, that was a poetic right there with a little foghorn in the background there, Tim. I like that. Man, did you plan that right there? Did you have that special effect ready to go?
I did not. Our Chihuahuas listeners probably have heard my comments on this. This is such a great stadium. This is one of my favorite places to come. They absolutely blare this horn after Oklahoma City home runs. And it's okay if you want to do that as part of your in-game entertainment, but we have to talk about the volume of this horn. It is louder than their introductions. It is louder than their music. It just hits my ears so loudly in our crowd microphone. One day, they were testing it in the afternoon, and I was walking over from the hotel. I could hear it on the sidewalk, 1,000 feet away from the stadium. I wasn't even in the stadium yet, and you can hear it.
Wow, that's so funny. That's crazy.
Yeah, so it still, after all these years, startles me on an Oklahoma City home run.
Okay, Tim, yesterday, the Chihuahuas, their win streak came to an end. I jinxed it. I said maybe they could keep it going. Maybe they could actually break their win streak. And unfortunately, 4 was enough. And the Oklahoma City, the Oklahoma City Baseball Club, there you go. I got it right there, Tim. They won 5-0 yesterday with Kelly on the mound for them, or getting the win.
Yes, the Chihuahuas really just couldn't get the hitting going. They had only 4 hits in the game, and they were shut out for the 4th time this year. There were some bright spots, though. El Paso starting pitcher Johnny Brito threw 5 shutout innings. That's what the Padres are hoping out of him. He was a major league reliever, but they're converting him to a starting pitcher, which is something he had done with the New York Yankees last year. So that's why he's in El Paso's rotation. And he had by far his best start. No walks, 5 strikeouts. So it's interesting. It's really an interesting time for Chihuahua's pitching. There's a report out of Miami that the former Marlins prospect and current El Paso Chihuahua, Sean Reynolds, will be called up.
Oh, yeah.
The Padres have not announced that, but if that proves to be true, that'll be the 92nd Chihuahua to make their Major League debut. So that's always exciting when we get a Chihuahua that not only goes to the majors, but it's their first time there.
That's awesome. Hey, we're about to hit the milestone, or the century mark, I should say, and hit 100 here soon enough. Hey, how about Mason McCoy, who's been pretty hot as of late? He also has had 4 hits in his last 2 games.
Yeah, Mason's really the skill he's known for is his defense, but he's had a good offensive series, as you described. Not only 4 hits, but 3 of those have been doubles. He's not in there tonight. But my guess is, him being a right-handed hitter, that he will play tomorrow against the great left-hander Clayton Kershaw. That's sort of been a buzz around the Chihuahuas today. Some players have faced Kershaw in the majors. Some Chihuahuas have faced him in spring training. And he's going to be the starting pitcher here tomorrow night. So that'll be a fun one for the listeners to tune into as well tomorrow at 6:05. Really, not an exaggeration to say, one of the greatest pitchers of all time.
Hey, last one for me. We found out today Andrés Muñoz is headed to the AL roster for the All-Star Game. That makes 7 players. This is all Jorge Salgado, our man George Salgado, who shoots photos for the El Paso Chihuahuas and is one of our great friends. He was writing today that this year it's Muñoz, Tatis, Profar, Strom, Naylor, Suarez, and C.J. Abrams all playing in the All-Star Game.
Yes, it's the most former Chihuahuas we've ever had in an All-Star game. In the past, it was Ty France and Brent Rooker as guys who had played for the Chihuahuas and then went up to the All-Star game. So some of those are on Major League Injury Rehab with El Paso, like Tatis, like Strom, like Suarez. But the others were not. George Salgado mention Josh Naylor?
Yes.
He's in there, yeah. So Naylor is an example. Muñoz is an example. These are guys that came up through the Chihuahuas before ever playing a day in the majors, and now they're Major League All-Stars. So pretty cool. Yeah, and I look forward to the final list because, you know, the All-Star game isn't until Tuesday, and there's still a chance for some more. I think Trevor Megill, the Milwaukee Brewers pitcher, maybe could become somebody like Muñoz, where if there's an injury, he could be added. And he's someone who pitched for the Chihuahuas in 2019.
Wow, that's pretty interesting stuff in itself. Hey, Tim, I hope you have a great call tonight. It was always great to have story time with you. We'll do it next week with Steve as well, as he's back in the mix next week. But until then, we'll talk to you next Tuesday here on Sports Talk when we do some crosstalk. Actually,
we won't.
We won't. We got All-Star break next week,
Tim. Oh, my gosh. I even forgot, too. I will not be with you. I will talk to you on
next week.
Friday.
Yeah, a week from now. All right.
I'm going to be visiting my parents in Massachusetts. I better remember to do story time when I'm there.
That's right. I love it. Hey, Tim, thanks again, as always. We'll talk to you here in just a couple minutes, okay?
Sounds good.
Tim Haggerty on deck. Chihuahuas baseball next here on 600 ESPN El Paso.
Tonight, the Chihuahuas will play Game 4 of a six-game series against the Oklahoma City Baseball Club. Hello and welcome to our Southwest University studio on location at Chickasaw Bricktown Ballpark in Oklahoma City. I'm Tim Haggerty with your Budweiser Zero pregame show brought to you by L&F Distributors. Budweiser Zero, full-flavored zero alcohol brew. Angel Munoz is our studio producer today. Last night, the Chihuahuas were shut out for the fourth time this year. They lost 5-0 to Oklahoma City. Although El Paso starter Johnny Brito was very good, five shutouts.